Welcome to Journey to the Sunny Side, the podcast where we have thoughtful conversations to explore the science of habits, uncover the secrets to mindful living, and of course, inspire your own mindful drinking journey. This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform. And if you could benefit from drinking a bit less, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. I'm your host, Mike Hardenbrook, published author, neuroscience enthusiast, and habit change expert. Today is a different kind of episode. I'm joined with good friend and colleague Ian Anderson, one of the co-founders over at Sunnyside. And today, we take a deep dive into the story behind Sunnyside's approach to mindful drinking without pushing anyone to quit, and why this method is effective for 96% of our members. Ian and I also share our personal journeys with alcohol, highlighting the challenges and wins that have brought us to where we are today. So join us for an in-depth conversation around the world of mindful drinking and what lies ahead for Sunnyside. Okay, today I have Ian Anderson. Ian is the co-founder and chief growth officer, which means that he's responsible for getting the word out about Sunnyside. And I don't know, about 8 months ago, Ian and I connected. We're both entrepreneurs. We both come from a software background, but our paths converged because we both share a value and mission, which is to help people with mindful drinking in that journey. And a lot of that relates to back to our own background. And whether it's to cut back, whether it's to take a break, or maybe even completely walk away, we both share a mission to really help people improve their lives on that goal. So today I want to share some stories. Ian's going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Sunnyside. And thanks for stepping out from behind the curtain, Ian, to share. And I'm excited about this one because it's just going to be a little bit off of our normal format.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. It feels long overdue already. We're several episodes into the podcast. I'm excited to be here and talk to you about whatever's relevant, you know, probably a little bit of the Sunnyside background and my story. And also, hopefully, we can have the guests learn a little bit more about you, our podcast host.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be fun because we have these types of conversations every single day.
Exactly.
Kind of all day long. So it's going to be fun to be able to share a little bit of, you know, what goes on and how we got to where we are right now. So I would say a good starting point for you is to, before Sunnyside, before everything took off, what kind of led you to the point that you went down this path? What brought you there?
Yeah, thank you. Well, the word takeoff is, we're still pretty early in the Sunnyside, you know, story. I appreciate it. We still have big goals ahead of us, so we can talk a little bit about that. But yeah, I think we're doing something pretty special with Sunnyside, which we'll talk a little bit about. I think, you know, where my personal story and the Sunnyside start kind of converged was in 2020, my co-founder, Nick. So this was right before the pandemic was starting, or right during the beginning of it. My co-founder, Nick Allen, came to me. He was in Mexico City with his wife, and he said, we had known each other for several years, kind of through the San Francisco tech scene and companies that we had worked at. And he said to me, he's like, Ian, I have this idea. I'm in Mexico and I just want to start like cutting back on my drinking a little bit. I looked for an app that would help me do it, and I found nothing, because all I found was these apps that were counting sober streaks and focusing on sobriety. And I think there's a real opportunity here to help people like me who still want to drink alcohol, but want to build a healthy relationship, start to do that with something as simple as an app. So that was sort of those were the first conversations that we had. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But why that was so important to me at the time is I had just taken some time off of work, a little bit of a sabbatical. I had come back and really wanted to like think about starting a company. I kind of knew what that meant. I had never done it before, but here's Nick Allen coming to me with this idea. So the wheels are starting to turn. But why it really mattered to me is because my family and background has been deeply impacted by alcohol for many generations. It's a lot of story, but I'll paraphrase a little bit. And of course, you can dig in if it's interesting. But generally speaking, or like high level, three of my grandparents passed away due to alcohol-related issues. On my my dad's mom apparently fell while at work and hurt herself and died from the resulting injuries. It was largely believed that she was under the influence at the time. My dad's father was a successful home builder in Arizona, but became addicted to alcohol in his later years. Even called my father up at some point and said, "Stan, I'm ready to drink myself to death." I'm just paraphrasing, but that's what he told his son over the phone. And sure enough, a couple of years later, he died from complications due to alcohol. On my mom's side, my mom's mom, it's largely believed that she had schizophrenia. Possibly it was diagnosed properly. I'm actually not quite sure. But my grandfather, who's still alive, he thinks for sure that she had schizophrenia, which may have led her to drink, or vice versa. I believe that's also, they can kind of be intermingled in complex ways. She sort of separated herself from the family, took to drinking as her focus, created quite a bit of conflict in the family, and eventually fully separated and died when my mom was relatively young. And then my grandfather, he's still alive. He struggled with alcohol a little bit. It's not something that's often talked about in the family, but he did as well during that period, but he's been sober for many years. And the one that's the closest to me is my mom and my dad, actually. So when I was several years after I was born, I have a twin brother. We grew up in Northern California. My mom and dad both took to drinking in ways that they had never done before. And for my father, it was something that he would do after work. The way he told me is that it started with a couple beers, and then it turned into a 6-pack a night, and then it turned into a 12-pack a night. And he told me in recent years that he that habit of doing sort of downers in the evening led him to also doing uppers at work as a construction carpenter. And in that industry, apparently, 30 years ago, that was not uncommon. So he was being sort of dragged down into this spiral. He eventually stopped drinking because he saw what was happening to my family. He stopped cold turkey with the support of AA. And after a couple rough starts and stops, it wasn't just overnight. I think he had intended to do it a couple times, but eventually he stopped cold turkey. AA was his route. I'm super proud of him for doing that and super thankful for the community that AA gave him at the time. My mom, on the other hand, she was a very different kind of drinker. She was like truly a closet drinker, and she would literally go under her closet and come out kind of a different person. Bedroom. And this was at a time that I was in some pretty formidable young years, around 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. I shielded a lot of that trauma because I had a twin and because that's kind of what happens. But around 7 years old, around 9 years old, my dad took us out of the family because he was clean at that point. My mom sort of separated from the family, very similar to what her mom did. So you can kind of see learned patterns and behaviors there. And she died when I was 11. I hadn't seen her for 2 years. Well, I saw her once within those 2 years, but we knew that it was coming. We got updates from the hospitals telling us that she was in the hospital again, that if she didn't quit drinking, this would be the last, her last chance. And so, the call came in when I was 11 years old, and it was pretty uneventful at that time because I was not very close to her and didn't really consider her super much a very big part of my family. But as the years have progressed, I'm in my late 30s now, and I've done therapy. I've realized the impact that has had on me, and that's all to sort of, I know that's a kind of a dark story, but I think it's important for our listeners to understand that Sunnyside comes from a place of deep personal compassion and lived experiences. At some point when I was younger, I thought to myself, I'm going to make a generational shift in my family. I'm not going to bring my family down when it comes to alcohol. My brother's very much on that path. My twin brother and my older brother and sister, I would say, are very much on that path. We haven't had anybody with problematic drinking, as far as I know of, that has had ramifications on their families. And that brought us to Sunnyside. That's brought me to Sunnyside. And the coincidence that Nick came up with this idea when I was looking to possibly start a company, and given my personal background, all this felt very serendipitous. So I'm extremely proud of what we've built at Sunnyside, and we still have a long way to go. We have big plans to make this a company that can help anyone who wants to take a break from drinking or cut down on their drinking a little bit, or maybe even eventually quit, but doesn't know where to start. This is the starting point. We want that to be the starting point for tens of thousands of people, if not millions of people.
Yeah. I mean, first, I'm sorry that you had to go through some of that. That's really difficult stuff. But I'm glad that you can share it, because I think everyone in some way or another is affected by alcohol in a negative way, whether it be through family or their own personal experience. So I think it's really relatable and sort of backs up what you're doing here, because you're coming from a place of experience and emotion and seeing how it can reach and affect other people. So Nick calls you, big surprise, from Mexico, saying, "I want to change how I'm drinking," which I don't know if that was actually the case, but basically.
Oh, that's very much the story.
Yeah.
It very much is.
I mean, I think the last time I went to Cabo, you see the people getting off the plane going out look very different than people that are getting on the plane leaving.
Yeah. Well, to Nick's credit, let me be clear. He was on a 6-month sabbatical with his wife. So it was more like, we're drinking wine every night, and then we're realizing that that's kind of digging into our days, and you know, we'd rather be more alert and be more intentional with our drinking. So he was like, I want to try planning my drinks, something that he had never really considered before. So it felt pretty novel at the time. It wasn't like he was going down there to rage.
I was trying to be a little bit sensational on it, but
guys.
I can relate, because I've done a lot of travel, and usually when travel is, alcohol is usually involved with that outside of the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we intended to on this podcast, I mean, well, let me introduce you, Mike. Can I? So Mike, you're the host of our podcast and newest member of the Sunnyside team, which is amazing. And you wrote a book called No Willpower Required. Then there's a second piece of the title about alcohol.
A neuroscience approach to change your habits with alcohol.
It's now a 5-star rated book on Amazon. And that's one of the ways that we really connected initially, was you wrote about your sort of approach and belief system to alcohol health, which exactly matched what we talked about at Sunnyside. I think for our listeners, it would be great if you're willing to share a little bit about your background and how you got there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we both have like a personal background to alcohol. Mine's a little different. Mine's more personal in my own experience. And so, you know, I went through college and high school. I pretty much did the typical drinking thing. And then as I got older, in grad school, I started drinking the evenings because I wanted to feel like I was still cool. And it then soon became a habit. So as I actually progressed into being an entrepreneur, I really didn't have a whole lot of accountability. And so without that accountability, the habit progressed. And at some point I got to a questioning point of asking myself, do I really want to continue drinking in the evenings? It wasn't crazy. I wasn't getting blacked out drunk. I wasn't like waking up in the morning and drinking, but it was like a habit, you know, like I would wake up in the morning, feel kind of crummy, go out for a run, get all my work done. Then by the afternoon, I'd start to think, that was a tough day. Maybe I'll reward myself with some wine in the evening. And then that just turned into a real habit. But I didn't identify with alcohol use disorder or having to go to AA and say that, the only option is for me to stop drinking for the rest of my life. It just didn't align. And unfortunately, because that didn't align, I would go 30 days, you know, and then I'd kind of slip back into it. And I figured there has to be a better way, but unfortunately that prolonged it. But not having an answer, direct answer at the time, really did prolong me making impactful changes with my habits. And so with the help of my naturopathic doctor, he said, well, let's take some supplements that might help you. Let's do some mindfulness practices. And I started doing research on habits And I went 30 days and I just said, you know what, I'm going to go 60 days because I feel so good. And I went 60 days. And then after that, I said, well, why don't I just go 90 days? And over time, what I realized is that I just didn't step out of that hamster wheel long enough to make longstanding changes. And then being mindful about it, when I did decide to reintroduce alcohol, I was not doing what I was before, which was basically, I was never taught how to drink. It was go out, drink as much as you can, as fast as you can in college and in high school. And I realized that if I bring more mindfulness to it, if I bring more planning to it, if I have coping mechanisms for when I have cravings, then I actually can change my relationship for the long haul. And so what I realized, so I did. And so several years went on. I was back in software. We were probably doing similar things in different types of industries and companies, Ian, you and I, but basically I always thought there's a book in everybody. And so I just started writing the book for myself. I was never drawn to want to write a business book, even though I probably could have written a business book. I just wasn't drawn to it. So I started writing for myself. And then I realized, you know, if there's just one person like me that felt like they didn't have a place to go, writing this book and actually giving it the effort that it should and publishing it, it'll make it all worth it. So I don't care if I'm a bestseller. I don't care if I sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of copy, if I just help one person. And what I found is that I was really mission driven by it. And all I thought about was how are ways that I can help? How are ways that I could make this better? And through a mutual investor in one of my companies and your company near AL connected us. And so we just started talking. There was no like agenda, just to connect. And that was kind of like, you know, the story of it all.
And we have an episode out with Nir Eyal, which is amazing if you haven't heard it. Mike, you said something that I loved, which was you set out on a mission to help even one person, right? That was your mindset. And what I'm sure you're realizing, as we have at Sunnyside, we created Sunnyside. Essentially, the first version of Sunnyside was absolutely built for what we would use. And of course, we built it out to include more features and round it out. But it still is really very much a product designed for us and people like us. So have you noticed that, like, is it only one person that's benefited from your book? Or are you seeing that there's a large community around us that, and like, have you been surprised by the response?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I actually started before I published a book. So I started, funny enough, I wrote the book long-handed in a journal starting, which I'll never do again, by the way. But I started taking pictures of the pages and saying, I'm writing a book about this for these types of people, which I call in the book in between drinkers, people that aren't I'm going to leave half my beer on the table and never think about it. You know, I remember thinking, how did those people do that? And it's not for the people that are, you know, really just full blown, like, the only way for me right now is to stop with this. For the people who I interviewed, Andrew Tatarsky said there's about 100 million people that are struggling with substance abuse that don't fit in that category of the traditional use disorder. And so I really wanted to write it for that. And so what I found is that a lot of people, even guys that I haven't connected with since college, wrote me and said, hey, I read your book and it's really amazing and it made a difference. And I know with Sunnyside, you probably get that all the time. Oh, it's just, it's like the best feeling in the world.
It's the best feeling. I want to talk about that too, but I want to riff off of something that you said and just relate to what you said. I don't want people in this listening to this thinking that I'm like a teetotaler and I'm totally sober and I've never touched alcohol. And so just to tell a little bit of my own story, I binged drank through college as well. And looking back on that, I look back on college as a really fun period. And I graduated in a good way at college with a degree in information systems management. I don't think I put myself in harm in college, but why we were binge drinking in college, I don't really know. I think it was very much just the culture that you're pulled into in college. And we think that we're invincible. But what people don't really understand at that age is that and now I'm probably getting in out of my depth here in terms of expertise, but alcohol can take a hold on you, even in a small way. So coming out of college, you can build these habits that become ingrained in you. So as you enter the work environment out of college, it's super normalized to you that going out is the thing to do. Well, though, I should say drinking when you go out to socialize is the thing you do. For me, when I was, it was about 2018, I was working for a company. I was working with a bunch of new people at a company. And we became fast friends, and there was a bar across the street, and like work honestly wasn't that hard at the time. So I'm working in San Francisco at a pretty good job, with a bunch of people that I just love. We're all becoming fast friends, and I find myself, without even really thinking about it, I'm going out 2 days a week now, getting pretty drunk with my friends, and up sometimes 3 days a week. And the turning point for me was, I was asked to be interviewed for, to be on camera, to talk about a product or something. I don't know what it was. And I got the video back and I was like, I don't recognize that guy. I even told the editors, I said, pull my video. I don't want to be on camera. I look bloated. I felt gross. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I'm not eating healthy. Maybe I'm not working out enough. But like, I knew that what I really needed to do was like build healthier habits in my life. And the first thing that I decided to do was stop drinking for 3 months, because I was drinking too much. I mean, I will admit that. And I was having fun with it, which is sort of like the risky part of it. But what I wasn't having fun with is how I felt and how I looked and how I wasn't performing at my best in terms of just like physical and mental performance. So I took 3 months off, and like, that's just the way I operate. I don't necessarily think people need to take time off, but it's sort of similar to you. I knew that 30 days was kind of like, meh, that's hard. But like 90 days was really going to stretch me. I felt amazing after 90 days. And I lost the weight. I felt normal, and I felt sharp again. And I think one thing that I remember telling my brother at the time, after not drinking for like 2 weeks, not even that long, was like, I told him, I feel like I have a cheat code. Like everyone around, I was at like some work event and everyone was drinking and was hungover the next day. And I was perfectly wide-eyed in the morning with tons of sleep. So for the first time in my life, I was really starting to correlate alcohol with anxiety, with health and weight, and also with performance the next day and sleep and recovery. I'd never really correlated those things before. So that felt really powerful. I was educating myself on how alcohol was impacting the rest of my life. Something that Sunnyside members, it's the first thing they realize when they join Sunnyside, is they weren't educated around alcohol. They were just consuming it out of habit. One of the outputs of this experience for me was I started tracking my several habits in a spreadsheet, which I've learned wasn't that novel. Like it was sort of the start of like the biohacker community where people started tracking their habits. So I had this spreadsheet and I was tracking my food intake for a while, which I don't really do anymore, to track calories. That's a little over the top, but it was helpful. And then I was tracking alcohol intake. I was tracking recovery. I was tracking like meditation, other habits I was trying to form. So what's just fascinating about that is I was doing what became the underpinning of Sunnyside, the foundation of Sunnyside, which is tracking your drinks. And I was starting that on my own. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one out there. By tracking my drinks, I was building awareness around triggers and volume of alcohol consumed, and also how it impacted other areas of my life. Again, it's exactly why when you join Sunnyside, we say, look, we have a really easy proposition for you. Just try tracking your drinks for 30 days. We're not going to pressure you to cut back unless you want to. We're not even going to really tell you to do much every day. We just want you to track. And this becomes the foundational habit for people to make long-term change around alcohol. It's going to help you understand your triggers. It's going to help you understand how much you drink. And it works profound ways on people. I know there's science behind it, but take the science out of it and just trust that that's the simplest, like tiniest little thing that you can do to start changing your relationship to alcohol, in my opinion. Especially if you don't want to start cutting back, is tracking your drinks. Do it in a spreadsheet, do it on a calendar on your fridge, do it in Sunnyside. However you do it, just start it and you'll start to reap the rewards.
Yeah. I mean, first to the story, I can relate. I thought maybe you were going to say when you got on the video that maybe you had an anxiety attack, because that would probably be the second thing that you could say other than saying you didn't like. Because I to elaborate on my background would, like I said, I was an entrepreneur, but that didn't mean I didn't have things that I had to do. I just didn't have to answer to a boss. And there were times when I got on like a webinar or something and I just had like, I had no idea that the alcohol was causing these panic attacks on these like speaking engagements. But back to what you were saying about Sunnyside, that's one of the best things that I really admire about what you guys are, what we're doing, which is making it about an experiment and meeting people where their goals are going to be, because it's such a complex and personal relationship. Everybody has their own individual goals. And like I mentioned earlier, that the obstacle for me was that the barrier of entry was way too high. For me, what worked is stepping out for 60 days, but that barrier of entry might be really difficult for some people. It's definitely not easy. And so just taking a, hey, let's have an experiment together, see where you're at and see where you want to go. I mean, it's about as low pressure as you can get.
I mean, now we're talking about the societal stigma around alcohol and the black and white nature of alcohol health. I mean, we should get into that a little bit, because I think a lot of people that join Sunnyside have similar feelings. So my take on this is, it goes actually back to my dad. So my dad joined AA, and I'm super happy that he did that and he got the support that he needed. And I'm not going to talk down on AA, but I'm just going to give some facts here and some opinions. I think AA is something that people join when they hit rock bottom. And we don't know what rock bottom is for everybody, but it is a very low point. And I think most people don't want to go to AA. They go because they realize they don't have any other option, or they don't think they have any other option. So you're joining a community of people that have hit rock bottom with their alcohol use disorder. And then there's systems within AA that I'm not the expert on this, but that can make you feel guilty if you slip up and you kind of don't maintain your streak. I also know that the success rate of AA, while it has collectively helped more people overall in the world than probably any other system when it comes to alcohol health, the success rate is relatively low. I don't want to give the exact number because I don't want to misquote it. So a lot of people still think today that alcohol health is nothing, as in I'm okay, or it's AA, as in I've hit rock bottom. Therefore, most people won't go try out AA because it's not for them. It's like, it's literally not for them. So then most people don't actually seek help. And you mentioned Andrew Tatarsky's 100 million people that are suffering from their relationship to alcohol. I think he might have said substance abuse, but I think for the sake of this conversation, it's 100 million people that are having a bad relationship with alcohol and could benefit from making a change. Those people are not going to make a change. They're not going to go to AA. So we still have a pretty black or white approach to alcohol health in the US, but I'm very happy to say it's changed a ton in the last 3 years. I know you've seen this too, Mike, and you've talked to several people now that have already talked about this, but the rise of the non-alcoholic drink movement, it's the fastest growing segment in every beverage company out there. And there's a reason for that. It's because consumers are changing their habits around alcohol and trying to drink less. The NIAAA has updated their definition of recovery to remove the requirement of abstinence. And younger generations are drinking less. So there are these things happening within society and culture that are indicating a shift toward a new understanding of alcohol. However, I think there were some recent reports that just came out that said alcohol consumption has not decreased overall in the past several years. And in fact, coming out of the pandemic, we're at an alarmingly higher rate than ever in terms of deaths from alcohol. So we still have a massive problem when it comes to how do people even get started with alcohol health. So there's this black or white nature that still exists, but at Sunnyside and the work that you're doing, we're here to tell people that you don't have to, quote, hit rock bottom. You don't have to quit drinking. in order to change your relationship with alcohol. Lowering the barriers to entry is the best way to put it. That's exactly what we're all trying to do and allow people to dip their toe in and just experiment. Like you said, it's a perfect word to use. Experiment with trying a different approach to alcohol and see how it changes your life.
Yeah, it's interesting that it hasn't gone down, but one of the studies I read that basically said that 20% of the really heavy drinkers account for 50% of the alcohol consumption, and alcohol companies really know that and focus and target their marketing on that to normalize drinking, to continue that on. So it seems like potentially, you know, that demographic might not ever change in some regard, which might cause it not to significantly reduce very quickly anyways.
That's a crazy stat. 20% represent 50% of the alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that doesn't surprise me if I think critically about that just for a second, but that is pretty alarming. I wanted to ask a little bit more about the anxiety thing. I think that's something that's incredibly interesting to our listeners and of course Sunnyside members. What's do you want to dig in a little bit more from what you meant about that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one little story that I didn't actually realize until I was later an adult. But so in college, obviously, I'm going out, you know, I got this big presentation, be fine. I got this, you know, the overconfidence. And so when I was a senior, I had to give a presentation to the large auditorium. So there must have been at least 300-400 people in there. And in the middle of it, I cut it off in the middle and just kind of passed it on to the next person because I just froze. And so then I had a little bit of problems with speaking later on in life because of that, because I was a little traumatized by that. No. Looking back, I realized I had no problems in youth. President of a class I was vice president of my fraternity, used to have good presentations and stuff. And then I think it's just probably one big night and it was a little bit higher than it was normally. And it just kicked it in overdrive. And looking back, I realized it was totally the alcohol. And the alcohol, it pushed it on, it made it worse because then I didn't realize it was the alcohol. But the two things that I noticed when I reduced alcohol or gave it up for a while or took a break was sleep improved and anxiety went way down.
Totally.
Yeah.
So there are, alcohol is very much tied to anxiety as you're saying. And the common pattern that we see with people joining Sunnyside is common with so many people. I drink two glasses of wine a night to help with my anxiety. That's the habit that people get in. And we know that it does have a short-term effect on helping decrease anxiety, but even one drink can impact your sleep in a negative way and cause more anxiety the next day. At higher levels,
it's 20% decrease per drink. Seriously? After the first drink on after your sleep effectiveness.
So every drink you're drinking after the first one is making you sleep worse.
Yeah.
Just effectively
by 20%.
That feels obvious, but it's good to say it. And then bad sleep makes you tired and anxious the next day, just by the nature of that. And alcohol also makes you more, more anxious the next day. The term that we use, that's kind of a playful one, is hangxiety, the hangover anxiety. It hurts your performance. It gives you stage fright. I mean, that sounds awful. I'm sorry you had that experience. I had a mini panic attack a year and a half ago during a Zoom call, and it had nothing to do with alcohol. I think I was just fasting that day. Like low blood sugar. And just thinking about that weird fear that happens that moment, it's terrible. And I know that people are having that experience a lot of days because of their drinking habits. So I think it's really one of the things we really focus on at Sunnyside. Not right away, mind you, but we try to introduce dry days. A lot of people haven't had a dry day for a long time, and that might sound kind of crazy to some people, but there's different styles of habit drinking. There's binge drinking on weekends, which is more what I fell into. And then there's the daily habit drinker. And the daily habit drinker.
That's where I was. Yeah.
Yeah, the daily.
Like, you know, still, as an entrepreneur, the only way I could say I'm going to cut off my thinking and working was I'm going to open that bottle of wine. That was the only way I could really say it's quitting.
To get your mind to calm down and stop racing.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I still have a problem with that. Like I'm constantly thinking and thinking. So it's been definitely new in the past couple of years. It's been a shift for me to say, like, I just don't drink on the weekdays, but I love that new version of how alcohol fits into my life. And then I still enjoy drinks on the weekend. Usually mindfully. I'm not perfect. Sometimes I'm with friends and I overdo it a little bit, but I don't beat myself up over it because I have sort of a different approach.
Nobody has a perfect record. That's what I always like to say. I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, I wrote a book on alcohol and I'm like, look, I don't have a perfect record. Yeah. Like, but I don't drink like I used to, which was the goal.
Yeah. And at Sunnyside, we keep everything positive, which is most people love. Some people wish that we were like a little more like a mean coach, but we're not going to do that yet. So generally speaking, what that means is if you drink a little bit more than your plan had been set for the day, we help remind you that like today's a new day, learn from your experiences, try to journal down what you might have done differently. So the next time you're in this situation, you can make positive change. And more importantly, make the next couple of days extra healthy, like give yourself, do a little bit of give and take for yourself. Yeah. And actually I was mentioning dry days. Dry days become really, really critical for helping people understand how drinking impacts their anxiety and their recovery. So it sounds basic, but for a lot of people, it's something they haven't done for a long time. We have had a couple of people at Sunnyside say after a couple of weeks of being with us, you guys are amazing. I just had my first dry day in 3 years. Normally I have 1 to 2 glasses of wine a night. I feel so proud of myself. Like this is the start of me making some big changes to my health. And then as you start to see that less drinking, improved sleep, decreases anxiety, you can start to correlate these things and start to sort of, this is not really habit. I mean, it sort of is habit stacking where your new habit of having a dry day on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday turns into better recovery on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you start to work out more in the mornings. So now you're stacking your habits. And when you start habit stacking, you're really empowering yourself to sort of keep these habits and hold yourself accountable. I bet your book goes into a ton of this too.
Yeah. Well, definitely on the anxiety side of things. And it's also like the habit swapping with a reward tied on the end of it. But I think what a lot of people don't really understand, and this isn't to demonize alcohol, but it's so that people understand what's going on, is that the anxiety and the sleep issues is actually a symptom of withdrawal, even in moderate use. And so like everybody thinks that withdrawal is going to be this, you know, a heavy drink or shaking and all that. But actually, these are just symptoms of using a drug, which is what it is. And it usually lasts, you know, and starts to peak at 12 to 24 hours. And so actually your sleep's not just affected the night that you drink. It'll probably be affected the next night. So you need to give it a little bit of time because you might be frustrated and wake up the next day without that reward of feeling refreshed. So I think it's really important to understand like what's going on, you know, when you're making these changes.
I love that you brought that up. I think you probably understand the science of alcohol better than I do. I'm trying to get better at it, but so you're saying that we're actually going through miniature withdrawals, which totally makes sense. If you just stopped for a second to think about it, it totally makes sense because alcohol, again, we're not demonizing alcohol. We never do at Sunnyside. We're all mindful drinkers, but technically it's a poison. And that, you know, there's been science that shows and new studies coming out updating recommendations around alcohol use that say no amount of alcohol is healthy. So what we want to do at Sunnyside is just, we want to educate people and make sure they understand why alcohol does the things that it does. But I want to ask you, Mike, one thing that I sort of learned and found really empowering is to at some point realize that when I'm having a drink and I want to have another drink after that, and then another drink, and the more I drink, the more I want to drink. I think a lot of people think something's wrong with them, that they're like, I'm broken and I don't have control over this drinking that I'm doing. But isn't that exactly the nature of alcohol? Isn't it basically doing things that are making you want to have that next drink?
Yeah. I mean, it's a reward system. So like, let's say you're on this cycle and you're feeling the effects of the anxiety the next day, and your likelihood to outcome of an action, which means like what you do and that what's that likelihood that you'll achieve what your the desired effect is. So the likelihood that if you have a drink is almost is going to be 100% that you're going to feel a little bit better on your anxiety on the short term. And so, you know, you get that to that peak. I think it's actually about educating people about, so they're not quote unquote chasing the dragon, which many of us just do because you feel good. So you just want to keep feeling good or even better. And with diminished ability to make decisions, because first of all, you're drinking. Second of all, you have decision fatigue from a day if you're drinking in the evening. So you're making poor choices anyways. So you're not going to be making the best decisions. And so when you feel good, you're going to want to have the next one and the next one. And I think it's really about educating yourself about where is that buzz where you get the euphoria and where does that pretty much end? And there's no added benefit to the way you feel and more negative for the next day.
You know, I mentioned that one of the ways that we help people to gradually understand their habits is by tracking. We do a lot of other stuff at Sunnyside as you get into the program, but curious what you would advice you would give to people who are trying to break a daily habit of drinking 2 glasses of wine. Like what's one of your secrets to like getting your first dry day or breaking the habit?
I think it's about, I think the first thing that you really need to do is flip the script inside your head. So a lot of people like to say, well, I can't drink tonight, or I can only have 2 drinks or all these things that we like to talk about that are in a framing of restriction. And I think you need to reframe it to what are all the benefits that you could get if you stick to your commitment that you want to. First, number one, I think when you get to wanting that commitment, you need to write it down so that you remember at that point when you were wanting to make a change, because you can easily have a short-term memory of like, if you start to feel better or whatever, look back on that and say, yeah, that's exactly how I felt. But then also like focus on like, tomorrow I'm going to get up an hour earlier. I'm going to go work out. I'm going to feel great. I'll go, you know, whatever it is for me, actually, I started making commitments to go mountain biking really early in the morning. Nice. And so that. Like, first of all, I made a commitment. So it makes it difficult for me to break it. And then when I'd go and I'd be on the top of a mountain, I'd think I could either be hungover in bed, or I could be up on the mountain laughing with my friends and having this great time. So there's this great reward tied to it, and like more that I'm getting and not that I'm losing it.
I love that. I was going to say something similar. So for myself, it takes a while to get into these habits, by the way. So like, if you're joining Sunnyside, you might not be able to just flip this on, but we're going to help you kind of get to this place. I have, I notice how good my day is if I get a nice hard workout in first thing in the morning. And I like to do it early just because I like getting it done before work starts. I feel so much better the rest of the day. I feel dialed in. And I know for sure there's some science around the dopamine hits that I'm getting doing the workout. What I find myself doing to sort of help regulate sort of desires around drinking, for example, not that they're very strong on the weekdays these days, but is thinking about how good I'm going to feel the next morning. And when you're kind of in that downtime in the evening, that can feel a little boring. But by focusing on how you're going to feel the next morning and thinking about how good you felt that the morning of, at least for me, it really helps just put me in a healthy mindset. And it makes me sort of stack rank things in my head. And like, alcohol is going to come way down here because I'm putting these other things in terms of priority in that moment. I think also combined in that is, I think you talked about this with Andrew a little bit, and we talked about it at Sunnyside, but urge surfing.
Mindfulness practices. You got to have like,
totally.
You got to have prepare for when your triggers or your cravings come. That's the other thing. It's key.
I love that. Yeah. And so urge surfing is, I'm sure I'm going to butcher this a little bit. My understanding is it's simply mindfully recognizing the urge to drink and trying to wait about 20 minutes to what did Andrew say? Surf the urge, let the ups and downs come in. And a lot of people find that after 20 minutes, the urge goes away. And you can couple that with a walk around the block. You could couple that with a meditation. A really good non-alcoholic drink works wonders, even just the sparkling water, an NA beverage, and an NA wine. That's your thing. I haven't really gotten into NA wines. Those help fill the ritual. Try to do that for 20 minutes, surfing the urge, focusing on your positive mindset for the next day. And that's a really good way to start approaching your first dry day. I love how you put that. You have to have like a little mindfulness toolkit. You can't just go into with no mindfulness at all. You gotta be prepared with a couple little tools.
Yeah. And you gotta pick the one that speaks to you. You know, there's a bunch of them. You can do urge surfing. You can do meditation. You can go for a walk. You can exercise. There's a ton of them out there, but do the one that like speaks to you. Just because like somebody says, I meditate and it helps me. Like do the one that you're like really called to so that you feel better and that you enjoy doing it. And it's not a chore. Cause then you're just in, like, you'll avoid it. You know, I think the urge surfing is the easiest one because you just allow, you recognize the craving or the urge or whatever, and you let it get as big as it wants to get. And you just have the mindfulness that it's going to pass. I'm going to recognize that it's there. I'm going to let it swell up to this wave and I'm going to let it, you know, come back down, and I'm going to give it some time. And that's one that you can pretty much do anywhere. Like even if you're at a restaurant, you know, and you're getting this urge because the person across from you has the wine, you can go in the bathroom and just like, you know, do a little bit of surf. So, you know, and then to your point about the NA, like that works for a lot of people. And I've heard the expression, don't change the ritual, change the ingredient.
I love that. Yeah. Don't be surprised if you create a new obsession around trying and collecting non-alcoholic beverages. I know that this has happened for a lot of people because there's so many out there. There's a lot of cool breweries creating craft beer. It's Victoria, right? That is sort of leading
Victoria
the charge.
Victoria Waters, Dry Atlas.
Yeah, yeah. If you're listening to this and you need inspiration on non-alcoholic beverages, she's a friend, sort of an ally in this movement. So check out her work too. And we have a podcast.
And on our podcast.
Sorry. Listen to our podcast.
Hey, actually, I got a question for you. So I'm curious to know. So you guys had the idea, you got things started. Was there like one big assumption that you had at the start that once you got into everything, and this could be business, this could be about what people wanted, about outcomes. Was there one big assumption that was totally off that you were surprised by?
How many can I give you?
Many as you want.
There's two. That's a really great question. I love that. It's sort of like geeking out on Sunnyside, but also on the business tech side a little bit. I'm going to give you two that come to mind for me. Okay. So the first version of Sunnyside was built on a text message platform because Nick, my co-founder, and I, while we are rather technical marketing nerds, we're not really developers. I've done some HTML coding in my life, for those who know websites, but I could not create an app if you asked me to. So Nick, wanting to build something quick and scrappy just to do a proof of concept, built a two-way SMS system. So for those of you using Sunnyside, you know that we still use text message. I think the big assumption was we're going to use text messages to then develop an app. And it's just going to be a testing playground for us. It turns out text messages were very, very engaging for our customers. They loved it. They loved not receiving push notifications. They didn't have to download an app. And it created this really personal conversation because what we did initially, and we still do, you can text in your drinks for tracking, but you can also text a coach. So in the same interface that you're building this daily habit around tracking, you also talk to a human if you want to. And then we started digging into text messages, or I should say like maybe these studies kind of fell into our laps. It turns out there was a study done on smoking cessation that showed a very big impact with in terms of text message use, helping people cut back on their smoking. And I think there may have been one on alcohol as well. But then we, finding that our members were loving text messages, we partnered with a university, I believe, to do a third-party study on Sunnyside to study the efficacy of text message intervention in terms of helping people decrease their alcohol consumption. And that study found a 30% reduction in weekly alcohol use after 90 days, looking at the Sunnyside platform as the sort of system. So my assumption was that we were going to move quickly from SMS as a test onto an app. Instead, we've kept SMS as sort of the magic of the system to create a personal experience, a discrete experience, a low barrier to entry. And we have the app now, iOS only, but Android coming out very soon, if anyone's listening. The app is there to introduce higher fidelity experiences. So we have a community, we have resources, and we have analytics and more to come. But the magical like interplay between app and SMS is something we, I'd like to say we expertly found, but we also stumbled upon a little bit, and we consider ourselves to be pretty fortunate that we found that combination.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, on the study side, it also anecdotally, I can tell you that I have a friend, he's like an executive investor type, very like, you know, he's very structured, but he does admittedly say that, you know, alcohol is his vice and not like out of control, but definitely something he needs to kind of dial back. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with him and I was like, hey, listen, we're doing this challenge this month, which by the way, anyone listening, sunnyside.co/Mike, we're doing this challenge. Why don't you, you can use Sunnyside. And so then, he said, yeah, I'll check it out. And I did much of it. And then we talked like a month later and he did sign up. And he was like, it works. And I don't know what it is, but the text messages, I can't leave my text messages unanswered or read. Like I'm that structured. So I don't know what it is about the text, but that's what made it work for me.
Yeah. I love that. We've had people say, I feel like I'm actually being that it's a person, even though some of it's automated, you know, a lot of the automated text messages, but they feel accountable to this person in their text message list, which is just fascinating. So it seems like an interesting way to create accountability. That's a great anecdote. We do get a lot of people saying, I'm here because of the text messages. Admittedly, we also get people saying, I left because of the text, but that's the burden that's on us to continue to kind of refine that experience and make sure that it's amazing. You know, we're still a young company. We're doing decently well, but we know that we need to create the right modality for each person. We don't want Sunnyside to be one size fits all. We want it to be a personalized experience. So yeah, we are working on ways to optimize the text messages. The other thing that comes to mind for me is something that I've been thinking a little bit about. So this is getting a little bit into the weeds of sort of marketing and branding, but the term mindful drinking, we have claimed that term. We ranked number one for it on Google almost. Sometimes it's number one, sometimes number two. And we love that phrase. It represents the destination of where we want people to be after they sort of cut back on their drinking and rebuild their relationship. You become a mindful drinker. But at Sunnyside, we don't love labels. And so we've also realized that the term mindful drinking might be a little too sophisticated in terms of not really being what people are thinking about when they want to cut back on their drinking. So it's just this thought process I've been going through. Like, is that something that we will continue to lead with? I think it's absolutely, like I said, it's the destination that we want people to get to. But as a growing company, we're still thinking about like, how do we make sure that we're talking to the right people at the right time so they can get the help that they need with Sunnyside? And so we're just doing a lot of thinking about how we continue to iterate on that. It's just kind of it's a really interesting problem, a challenge for me and the team to tackle. And one of the ways we've been doing that to learn our way there is we've been doing more customer interviews lately. We get a ton of automated customer feedback through the app and the community and the coaching, but it's been a while since I've gotten on the phone and talked to customers. It's been brilliant. I absolutely love talking to the customers, and we've had a few of them actually sort of graduate from those calls and do podcasts with you too, which is another really great outcome. But by talking to customers, we're going to continue to better understand their language, how they found Sunnyside, and what's the best way that we can continue bringing, you know, alcohol moderation, alcohol mindfulness, whatever the right terms are, we want to make sure we're using those terms so that we can get the most people interested in Sunnyside.
It's hard to do it when you don't believe in labels, but you still have to talk about it, because I ran into the same issue with my book. It's like, okay, yeah. I have to identify a categorization. Yet I also have a chapter that says, I don't believe in labels because I think they're self-limiting. And I think that you really can define who you are and what you want to be, and not based off of what, you know, somebody coined a term or something like that.
Yeah. This cuts a little deep for me. I'll try to keep this short, but my dad passed away last year. And he, up until the months before he passed away, he was still talking to my twin brother and I about his alcoholism. He had been sober for 30 years and he was still carrying this heaviness with him, these regrets, these things that he wanted to apologize to us about, that he had already apologized to in the past, whether it was his mind forgetting or this like deep guilt and shame that he felt. And I think this gets complex, but I don't think he was an alcoholic when he died at all. Like, not even close. He was a great man who had stopped drinking 30 years ago to help his family live a better life. And I think it's the programming that he went through at the time that gave him that label, that permanent label. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, you're always fighting. Man, that is, I think, a dark place to live, and something that I wish hadn't burdened him. Obviously, that was his own journey, and maybe that was better for him. But yeah, I think to me, that's why labels feel scary to me, is that they can kind of bring people down long after the initial, label, like after the initial label was applied and like was actually relevant.
Yeah. It's such a complex issue. So it's hard to put a label that's broad sweeping on an entire group of people, you know?
Yeah. And why, I mean, that phrase, that term alcoholic carries so much baggage. So for someone to have to call themselves an alcoholic when they haven't drank for 30 years, it's a lot. This is one of those things that I have a lot of opinions about, but not super well educated. It's more of like personal experiences. So, I know it's a solid topic.
I mean, I think we both agree, like, if it works for somebody, that's the solution that works.
But totally agree.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. I have seen people on, you know, there's a big community out there on social media. And I have seen somebody say, don't know who it was, I wish I did, say, I like calling myself an alcoholic. I like the label so that it kind of keeps me on the right path and so that I recognize who I am. And then I've seen others absolutely push away from that and say, I'm not going to call myself from that label. I'm not even going to call myself sober. I'm simply somebody who's not drinking at the moment, because even sort of calling yourself sober can have connotations and implications when it comes to how people think about you.
Yeah. I think the one thing that we're like both adamant and passionate about is the offering more options, that there's not only one option. And part of that is like, you kind of have to stand your ground if you have another option, because the way the traditional abstinence model works, and I found this out by talking to Andrew Tatarsky, is that basically if they don't support it, they see it going on and they don't try and support what they're doing, then they're basically not part of what they're on. So with it, there's a lot of very like vocal people that don't really align or see the vision with some of the other options out there.
Yeah. And the community that's been through AA, that's rather vocal and like has a pretty strong standing and belief system, it's awesome. They support each other, and they have a firm belief in the way that alcohol should sort of be in your life and some terminology that they use. I think that's awesome that it's helped so many people, but I think it does turn off a lot of people because I think at the end of the day, AA is still kind of all or nothing. When you go through the AA programming, that's sort of what they're preaching. It is absolutely what they're preaching, actually. It's all or nothing. And those people that go through it, like I said earlier, might need that and probably do need that. but it certainly turns off a lot of people from ever wanting to go to AA. And again, that's why it's really important for us to look and at other options in the market, not just Sunnyside. There's medication that can help you curb your binge drinking. Therapy has been shown to be highly effective at helping people understand their triggers and therefore issues with substances. And of course, like a perfect combination of all of those would be using a app like Sunnyside, going to therapy, and maybe even trying your medication, talking to your doctor about alcohol, if that's the path that you're on. But for a lot of people, the easiest thing to do is sign up for a free 15-day trial of Sunnyside and start learning how to sort of build healthier habits. It's really cheap, money back guarantee. And you determine your own path after that. You use Sunnyside as the way to start, and you decide if that's all you need or you decide if you need more.
Well, if you plug that, I'm going to say, and if you get my book, which I offered all the Sunnyside users for free, it's going to give you a bunch of mindfulness practices that stack really well on top of what Sunnyside does and gives you a little bit of understanding on the physical level and everything. And so I think that's why we've always been so aligned, because the two combo really, really nicely. And we both just share that vision that, you know, that you can choose your own path to change and get to where you want to go.
Yep. I love that. Yes. Thanks for adding your book in there. That's what I meant. Yeah. The perfect combination is Sunnyside plus Mike's book.
Well, hey, I have guests on here all the time and they get to plug their books. So I'm going to take a moment to be able to do it.
It sounds good.
Okay. So we're coming up on the end of the time. This has been a lot of fun. I like the new format too, just to be able to go back a little back and forth. And
yeah,
you know, we get to do this during the day. So it's just us hanging out, having fun. But I think, why don't you like share any of like some future facing things or some things that you're excited about for, you know, going on at Sunnyside?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, one of the main things, I know it sounds kind of hokey, but we're investing in this podcast because we're seeing a lot of positive reviews and feedback. And I think the education that we're bringing to people is incredible. And so we're going to continue to build this out, elevate it, and just make it amazing. That's obviously on you, Mike, and me with support from me. But the thing that I think we're most excited about is we are releasing our Android app very, very soon. That people have been asking about this for a long time. We know that a lot of people that are using Sunnyside are using only the text messages and the web interface. And with the app, you get a much more comprehensive experience. So I'm really, really excited that we've been able to work hard on this in the last couple of months and bring it to market to help a lot more people improve their relationship to alcohol with Sunnyside. We don't have anything that we're doing specifically for Alcohol Awareness Month, but April is Alcohol Awareness Month. And I would say that that's one of the reasons I wanted to come onto this podcast this month, just to educate people a little bit more on Sunnyside and where we're coming from. But also with Andrew Tatarsky kind of in the mix, we're hoping just that at the very least, we're bringing some really good content to people during Alcohol Awareness Month. And then I think the next thing that's probably on our radar in terms of like interesting moments for like people to start using Sunnyside would be, it's a little ways off, but Sober October is sort of the cousin to Dry January. And that's happening obviously in a couple months, several months away from now. But I think it's, if anybody's sort of listening to the podcast and thinking about giving Sunnyside a shot, obviously you can hop over to our website any time. But the Sober October moment is also a really neat time to join a huge community of people taking a more mindful approach to drinking within that month. It doesn't have to be sober, of course. And we tend to see a lot of interest around that time. So keep your eyes open for that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to toss in another project that we're working on, which I'm working on a digital video course. And we were able to bring in Nir Eyal, who's one of the foremost experts in habit change. And so he's going to talk about some neuroscience and science-backed methods as far as like habit change, addressing triggers. And so I'm pretty excited about that project drawing out, and we're going to be able to offer that to everybody who's listening here for absolutely free.
Sweet. I was just going to ask, that'll be a totally free offering, right?
Yep.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Great.
All right, Ian. Well, hey, this was fun. If anybody's watching the video, Ian is in a cabin in the woods right now. So, you know, after this, I'm sure you'll go out and have some Zen moments.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure, Mike. Let's do this again. I really enjoyed it. And thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform, having helped hundreds of thousands of people cut out more than 13 million drinks since 2020. And in fact, an independent study showed that Sunnyside reduced alcohol consumption by an average of 30% in 90 days. And as one of our members shared, Sunnyside helps me stay mindful of my drinking habits. It's not super restrictive, so if I'm craving a glass of wine with dinner, I just track it and I move on with my week. If you could benefit from drinking a bit less and being more mindful of when and how much you drink, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. You'll get access to everything that we offer, including tracking and planning tools, coaching from our experts, a vibrant community of people just like you, and the motivation and advice to stay on track with your health goals, all with no pressure to quit. That's sunnyside.co.